On this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, we got Tom Galitti, our colleague from Washington, talking all things Capitals and a little bit on the Nashville Predators. We talk Sidney Crosby's 600 goals, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Boston Bruins, and we give a little plug to the Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend, which is coming up.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into the NHL At The Rink podcast. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, welcome back to the good old US of A, to North America, to your favorite Eastern time zone. Took you 23 hours to get home from Finland?
23 hours. Kitos to all the listeners. We're going to have Tom Galitti on from NHL.com a little later. I spent the week with him in Finland. We had a fine time. It was an awesome trip, two awesome games, an awesome celebration of the Finnish players in our league. But the trip home, a little long. I left at 2 in the morning Eastern time. It was 8 in the morning in Finland. Bus to a plane to Dallas. Layover, delay, plane to Newark, Uber home. Walked in the door at 1:30, 23 and a half hours.
Yeah, that's right. You had to go to Dallas because you were flying with the Dallas Stars. That you know, look, I flew home from the Global Series in Czechia with the Buffalo Sabres. It couldn't have been a fun. they you know, it wasn't exactly a noisy flight home after they lost their two games there. And Dallas loses twice in the Global Series in Finland, too, to the Florida Panthers. So I'd imagine it was not a noisy flight on the way home to Dallas either.
It was not. It was early in the morning. But I don't think it was the same because, look, they wanted to win. And they really wanted to measure themselves against the Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers because they believe that they're that team after going to the Western Conference Final twice. And I think they felt like they did in game two. And for the second part of game one, although they were chasing it a little bit, they were down 6-2 and the game ended 6-4. But I think what overrode that was the experience that their three Finnish players had. Roope Hintz, Esa Lindell, and Miro Heiskanen. It was such a special thing for them. And the same thing on the other side with the Florida Panthers. It was such a special celebration where the Buffalo Sabres didn't have that. It was a business trip for them. Yep. This for Dallas was something else. And they have such a rich history through Finland, you know, with Jiri Lehtinen and starting there and going on. And the ability to see those players in their native country and to enjoy what happened and to be a part of it. I mean, the opening ceremonies with the fans singing the national anthem, the Finnish national anthem. On day two, they just had a violinist. So the crowd sang the national anthem, and it was tear-inducing. For me, as a neutral, it was. I can't imagine what it was like for the players. And each coach was smart enough to put all the Finns out to start the game, even though that wasn't their natural lines. And again, I just think it was such a celebration of Finland and of three very important players on that team. You know, Matt Duchene said, hey, look, it sucks to lose, and I'm really upset, and I can't wait to go home and take it out on the Chicago Blackhawks. But I hope the Finns walk away with an appreciation of what happened this weekend because it's a once-in-a-lifetime event, and I think they did, and I think their teammates did.
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, that those are the memories you take away. You don't, you know, the long term, you don't worry about the two losses. You worry about them in the moment, but you don't worry about the two losses years from now when you're telling the stories of how you went back to Finland to play with your NHL team. Those are the memories you take. They open up their back in North America schedule. Tonight, it's Thursday, they play the Chicago Blackhawks, and then Saturday, I think they go to Winnipeg, and Winnipeg just doesn't lose. We'll get to them in a little bit, but listen, Dallas lost two games. That's okay. They're going to be fine. We're going to talk to Tom. We talked to Tom Galitti, our colleague based in Washington, a lot about the Capitals, but also a little bit about the Nashville Predators. They're a little bit struggling. But, Sean, just today, Thursday, Philadelphia Flyers, team that we know is struggling. Matvei Michkov is a healthy scratch. John Tortorella took him 13 games into, I think this is their 14th game now. scratched him. So something along those lines. He's scratching him. Says he's not living up at the even strength. He's just not playing well. I don't know what to think of this, Sean. To be honest with you, I have so many different thoughts on this. One, he's a young player, and it's never a problem if a young player who might be struggling a little bit gets scratched, watches a game. It's okay, right? I mean, this is not going to blow things up for his career. Two, sometimes this is just John Tortorella does. You know, he finds the guy that everybody's going to notice who he's scratching, and he makes a point to scratch that guy because he's trying to make a point to everybody that, you know, it doesn't matter who you are or your pedigree or what the hype you come in with. I control this and we're not good enough. Three, the Flyers just aren't good enough. And he could probably scratch 11 or 12 guys, you know, like the way they're playing right now. He talks about Michkov at even strength. They're a minus 17 goal differential for a team at even strength. I mean, they've played 13 games. They're minus 17 at 5-on-5 in goal differential. That's hard to do, and that's where they are. So a number of different thoughts there. But listen, that's me, long-winded. What do you think of the Michkov decision here, scratching him by Tortorella?
Who cares? Like, he's a young player. Like, look, the Leo Carlson.
Well, that was a plan, though. That was a plan last season with Leo Carlson.
A plan or not, he was scratched for over 20 games.
Yeah, but they planned it. They talked about it. They said they didn't want him playing every game.
They made it nice. They made it nice and shiny and protected him, which you do with young players.
Yeah.
But he was scratched. He wasn't good enough to play every game. That's what management decided. He's not ready. And we're going to protect him. And we're going to say it very nicely. And we're going to come out, we're going to say, we plan on sitting him for these games. Do you think if he was really, 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 really good and the San Jose Sharks were better than they were?
The Ducks, yeah.
And the Anaheim Ducks were better than they were, that he wouldn't have played more?
No, you're 100% right. And maybe this is along those same lines.
Here's part B, Dan. Did you see who sat the other day for the Boston Bruins in the third period?
Yes.
The whole period?
Yes. We'll get
is
there.
Is David Pastrnak a more accomplished player than Matvei Michkov?
Yeah, a little bit, yes. A little bit
so
more accomplished.
Why would he be immune to tough love?
I'm not saying he is. I think this is a young player. I agree with you. Like, it becomes a bigger deal because of the hype he comes into the league with. The fact that right now he's the second leading scorer on the team. Now, mind you, 7 of his 10 points to date have come on the power play, right? But he's the second leading scorer on the team. The thing is, he's a second leading scorer on a not very good team, right? On a team that's struggling. They've got 4 wins. They're 4-8-1 as we talk right now on Thursday. So at the end of the day, this is more for the player than it is for the team. It has to be more for the player than it is for the team, because you can't tell me that the Philadelphia Flyers are a better team without Michkov in the lineup than they are with him in the lineup. This you can couch it however you want if you're John Tortorella. This is about the player. It has to be about the player.
Well, I think it's about the situation. I don't know that it's about the player. I think it's about the situation. I think it's about it being a long season, a season that he's never experienced. I think it's the opportunity to see an NHL game from a different angle than playing it. He hasn't seen a lot of NHL games.
Hardly any.
So put him upstairs. Let him see the game from a different angle. Let him ruminate on it. I mean, he's not the first player that's been put in that situation. So I don't even know why it's a headline. Well, I do know why it's a headline. One, it's his name. Two, it's Philly. And three, it's the boogeyman, John Tortorella. Yeah,
right, exactly. If this was a different coach, it wouldn't matter.
That's the perception, is that he's mean and he's putting the star player in his place.
Look, he's coaching. Right? I mean, he's
I know
he's
he
coaching. And that's exactly what Jim Montgomery did the other day. So let's flip it to the Bruins before we get to our interview with Tom Gallitti, our colleague in Washington. Let's flip it to the Bruins. Like, David Pastrnak had a bad turnover. He hadn't been playing well. He hasn't scored in 5 games. He's not helping. So what do you do if you're Jim Montgomery? What do you control? You control ice time, right? That's the hammer that you hold. That's the hammer. And David Pasternak's not living up to his end of the bargain. So you know what? For 20 minutes, he got scratched. 20 minutes. Got benched, right? And the reaction, rightfully, was to notice it by everybody. Oh, man, David Pasternak got benched. And then Pasternak's reaction was spot on. I got to be better. You know, he ate it, right? He probably doesn't agree with it. There's no way the Boston Bruins are, like, you know, what I said with Michkov. There's absolutely no way the Boston Bruins are a better team when David Pasternak is sitting. Okay, we know they're way better when he's playing. But he ate it. Probably didn't agree with it, but he ate it. He was a professional about it. It's the same way Brad Marchand was when he got yelled at on the bench. But doesn't it speak to some bigger issues that the Boston Bruins have, right? We talk all the time about the culture of winning in Boston, and that's carried them, and it still and it continues to. It's probably why we're not hammering them right now. But they have not been good, Sean. Pasternak has not been good. Marchand has not been good. Their depth is not very good. Swayman has not been good. But we kind of gloss it over a little bit now because they have the pedigree and they have the culture. You scratch Michkov, he doesn't have any of that. The Flyers don't have any of that right now. Becomes a bigger deal.
Yeah, and look, you can own it. You know, Pasternak was like, hey, I deserved it, and I have to be better. But he wasn't.
No, none of them were. No, they lost 4-0 to Toronto on Tuesday.
And he was semi-invisible. Right, and I think Marchand's been a little bit better since he got yelled at, and both guys handled it professionally, and Montgomery handled it professionally, right? There hasn't been huge headlines, but nobody's really helping out. Like, there's no cavalry behind those two guys. Lindholm was brought in to be a top two center. He's been mediocre.
Pavel Zacha hasn't scored in 13 games. He's got one goal.
Yeah, McAvoy hasn't been great. Zadorov hasn't been great. Like, none of those guys have come in and really helped out. Charlie Coyle has 2 points. Is Charlie Coyle a 2-point player?
No.
No. Again, I think there's some attention grabbing, right? If you sit Charlie Coyle, some people might not even notice. But again, when you sit Pasternak, everybody notices, and it becomes a talking point afterwards. And I think as a coach, that's how you get your message out. And sometimes you use your best players. And I think you have to understand those players, right, and how they take it. And that is my one concern with Michkov, not knowing him very well and the culture gap and everything else is, does he understand? Does he take it the right way? Because that's not something that happens to Michkov. Right, and Pasternak and Marchand, they're going to take it the right way, A, because they've lived through it with other players, they've lived through it with themselves, they understand accountability, and they understand when they're struggling. Sometimes rookies don't, mm-hmm. and it becomes personal, and it's not. So that's kind of the hope there, I think.
All right, so last one before we get to our interview with Tom Glitty, I'll ask you this question about the Boston Bruins. I'm not quite there yet because they have enough in the bank for me, but are we talking about a team that maybe just isn't as good as we thought they were going to be?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of runway left, and I think they can right the ship to a degree, but I don't think they're among the elite in the East, not the way that they're presently construed or the way that they're presently playing. I think a lot would have to change. Like, it's not one or two things. Like, there needs to be wholesale changes in the way that they play. Like, I'm not suggesting that there needs to be wholesale changes in moving the roster or coach or anything like that. I just think in their commitment to details. I mean, the one thing you could never knock the Boston Bruins on were the details. They were going to play the game the right way. They were going to be on the right side of the puck. They were going to work for 60 minutes. They were going to play smart, fundamental hockey. They haven't done any of that.
There's only so many times you can stand up in a post-game press conference and say, you know what? We just didn't have our details. We weren't committed. We didn't have the focus. We didn't play well enough. We didn't play our style. There's only so many times you can do that as a coach before you're not doing it anymore, Sean. So that is something to think about. At the very least. Listen, hey, we talked to Tom Glitty, so let's get to that. He's our colleague based in Washington, and this interview for NHL At the Rink is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's our chat with Tom Glitty. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. So where do we begin? With the Washington Capitals, a team with 9 wins in 12 games, and Alex Ovechkin has goals in 5 straight. Let's start with Alex Ovechkin. 8 goals already this season. I think it took him until January to get 8 goals last season. What's different?
I think there's a bunch of things. One, we'll start with second half of last season when he was playing really well. I think he scored 23 goals in the last 36 games. So I think he kind of got past the he definitely struggled the first three and a half months, 4 months of last season. And, you know, I think the way he finished, he sort of picked up this year. I think one of the other things is that they just have a better team around. Last year, when he was scoring at the end of the year, they'd score 2 goals, and maybe he'd score one of them, and that's how they won. And now they're scoring, I think, averaging around 4 goals a game. They have, you know, they just the team, the additions they made. I know the stats don't show yet for Pierre-Luc Dubois, but the addition there, they've added another line with, you know, where Connor McMichael's off to a great start, and so is Tom Wilson. The three of them playing together with Dubois. And so last night, the game against Nashville, it was, you know, 2 goals from Ovechkin's line because Protas scored, and a goal from McMichael. And they're getting a lot of different, the fourth line also contributing here and there. They're just getting a lot of a much deeper team around him. So he doesn't have to carry the load. And it's also harder to just concentrate on shutting him down.
So then let me ask you this, Tom, are we spending the last month of the season sending you all across North America to see if Ovi breaks the record?
You may be sending me. I wasn't, when I started the season, I thought he would have, I think he had 31 goals last year. I thought he'd be better than that this year, but I thought maybe like around 38. Now he's on pace for what, 50 something? I know it's really early. It's only 12 games, so he can't really get too carried away with pace. But the way that he's playing and the way the team is playing, I think we could be looking at he needs 42 goals this season, and he's already got 8. So he's on his way, and when he starts strong, that's the way the season goes. I know he's 39, but he's defied his age so far. So I will not be surprised if I'm traveling around watching him to see if we get to gate goal number 895 at the end of the season.
Well, I'll tell you what, I cheated and I did look after he scored yesterday, and we're recording this Thursday after he scored in the 3-2 win against Nashville. I did look, and they do come to UBS Arena in Long Island twice, I think, in April. And I was just wondering myself, like, would I be able to be at one of those games as well as Tom? You know, so it's a little bit of a selfish look. But I got to tell you, I think it's happening, Tom. Like, you know, the puck's finding him, right? They're finding him in scoring areas. It didn't find him in scoring areas at this time last year and for several months. But it's finding him in those areas. And his goal against Nashville is the perfect example of that.
Yeah, and he's also just, he's moving around. They sort of moved him to the right wing. He's all over the place, but he's sort of the right wing now. You'll see him in the left side just as much as he's on the right side. And I just think it's the way they're playing. And if you just watch the Capitals play, it's completely different than a year ago when they really had to struggle and play defensively. You know, Alex is not as fast as he once was, but the team is faster around him now than it was 2 years ago and even last year. The way they played, and you just see the way they play, the way, you know, guys like Protas skates and gets in on the forecheck, and you know, Dylan Strome has played really well passing the puck to him. You know, last year Dylan, I think at the beginning of the year, had like 10 goals and 1 assist at the beginning, and people were calling him Cy Young, and he didn't really like that too much because, you know, he wanted to be do everything, and now he's got, I think, 15 assists. He's among the league leader in assists, and he's playing really well for them. So just a lot of good things clicking for the Capitals and them, you know. Like Alex said the other day, there's going to be some downtimes with this team where things are going well now, but they're set up the way they're set up now. I think they can endure those and come back out the other side much better than they were last year.
Well, Tom, I hope you do get to go this year, but I'm going to be the naysayer here and say it travels into next year, because I think Alex Ovechkin is right. I think there are going to be some downtimes for the Capitals and for Alex. Like, the puck is following him right now, but it's very rare that a puck follows anybody for the whole year. So I'm not saying that it's going to be a flip of last year where it took him 3 months to figure things out and off he went. I don't think he's going to have that kind of slump, but I think there's a slump coming at some point.
One thing I guess you could look at with the Capitals is their power play really has not produced at all yet. And if they get that going, which is one of the things that got going in the second half last year when they actually had the best power play in the league after the All-Star break. They actually get that. That'll be another part of his game that'll you know, he can produce there. We sometimes, you know, he's having a bad game, even strength, and they set up, and all of a sudden the power play comes along and he scores a goal. That's how he's always gotten out of his, kept from having really long slumps, except for last year in the first half.
Tom, you brought up a good point. their power play has not been very good, right? Their penalty kill has been very good. So you look around and you look at this team and say, well, okay, they're doing it on the PK and they're doing it at even strength. And to me, that suggests sustainable, right? Like that's where I look at it and I say, maybe not winning 9 of every 12 games, but the way they play, their style of play, that seems sustainable if they're getting it done right now at even strength and on the PK and they're not relying on a red hot power play. You agree?
I do agree with you. I think, I mean, the 5-on-5 play is probably going to drop off, but at some point, I don't expect their power play to be this bad all season long. You know, a lot of teams go off to slow starts, and they did last year. I just think they're trying to figure some things out, and you've had some players that have been, like last night against Nashville on Wednesday night, I thought they really moved the puck around well, just missed on a couple, connecting on a couple plays. Dubois has been snake bit. He only has one goal as an empty netter, and I feel like that's going to come, and maybe he'll get back in the first power play unit. But it's just, I do think it is more sustainable with the way they're playing right now than what they were doing last year. And it was really, they had to grind out games and try to win 2-1. And it was like, not smoke and mirrors, but they really had to, it was like everything had to fall in place for them to win a game. And I don't think that's the case anymore. Even last night, they didn't play. I thought Nashville took to the game to them. Nashville was desperate. They tried to, you know, they had a coming off a poor game a couple nights before against LA, and they really at times took the game to them, but they were able to withstand that and find a way to win the game late. And that's kind of what, you know, what good teams do sometimes. They don't play their best and they find a way to win.
Is part of their success, I mean, we talked about all the additions, right? Chychrun, Dubois, all those guys. But is part of it the Hershey kids coming up and coming of age? When you look, you talked about Potois and then, you know, McMichael. Like, are these the guys that have finally found their way and are the kind of that bridge between generations here?
I think that those two guys have definitely taken another step this year. Last year, they started strong also and kind of faded in the middle of the season and then came on later again. And I think both of them have started off really strong. And I think they definitely, you know, I think what they're doing now is more, and I don't expect Connor McMichael, he also has 8 goals in 12 games. I don't expect him to score 50 something goals this year, but I think he's going to be better than, you know, he scored, I think 18 last year. I think he's going to be, you know, could be a 30 goal scorer. At least he's really fit in well. He's normally a center. They've used him at left wing on and off, and he's fitting really well at left wing on that line with Dubois and with Wilson. And so I think the two of them with the way they skate, you know, Hendrix LaPierre unfortunately hasn't gotten off. He's gotten off to a little slower start, but he's another guy who could really fit into what they're doing as far as the youth movement and having more, you know, having those young legs in there. And maybe by the end of the season, we're going to see Ryan Leonard coming from Boston College. So that's what you're seeing as far as the future. And they're trying to bridge that future and also, you know, remain a good team, which they are right now, and help Alex win, you know, get that record.
Well, I mean, you said the magic name, Ryan Leonard, right? I mean, every Capitals fan is waiting for this guy. They thought he might be there this season, but now they wait for him. But you know, to Sean's point a little bit, it's not, we talked about their summer, right? And it was a good summer. We knew going into this season that expectations to be a playoff team again and to be a better playoff team would be higher because of the additions of Dubois, of Mangiapane, of Matt Roy, Jacob Chychrun, you know, Logan Thompson, who's 6-0. But of those guys, Tom, it's really just Logan Thompson who's made a significant impact, right? I mean, Dubois got 1 goal, right? I mean, Mangiapane's got 3. Matt Roy's played in 2 games. Chychrun missed some time, too. So it's really the guys who have been there that have taken the step. Am I wrong to say that? Or have these new additions, well, clearly they make them a deeper team. Have the new additions played a bigger role than I'm giving them credit for?
I think their production has not been there. And one of the things is Mangiapane is on the third line, and that line hasn't found itself yet. So it's not anything he's been doing. He's just playing in a role that he would have thought he would have had a bigger role at this point. Dubois has not been scoring, but he's been helping that line with, as I said, with him and McMichael and Wilson. They play against top lines every night. They played against the Nationals top line last night with Stamkos. I think they were even with them, but they play against the Rangers top line. That's what they use them for, and they're a part of their success. I think Chychrun, before he got hurt, was a very important part of their team on the defensive side of it. And just kind of adds another offensive element back there, which they didn't have. They scored only 20 goals last year defensively from defense. So you're kind of overlooking a little bit, and I understand why. Duhaime and Radish on the fourth line, that line has been really good for them. They chip in a goal here and there. They don't have to play against top. They can, but they don't have to play against top lines anymore, which is usually what Nick Dowd's job was on the fourth line. Now they can. Now they they can do some offensive damage and also play well defensively. So I feel like those guys, they're just deeper. And maybe as we go on here, those guys will start to contribute more. I think, you know, looking at the opposite side of the ice yesterday, look at Nashville, and they added some big names too. And those guys haven't produced, but no one else around them has either. You know, like that's the problem. Like they're not getting the time to find their games with a new team that Dubois and I think Dubois has played well, but like the time to find their production that Stamkos is not getting that time to, and Marchessault, they're not getting the same amount of adjustment period because no one else is scoring either. Right. So the Capitals have, like you mentioned, those guys, particularly, you know, McMichael and Protas have really done a good job, and their speed and everything and energy brings a lot to the team to help everything that they have been better this year, for sure.
Are the Capitals better because of Logan Thompson, or is Logan Thompson better because of the Capitals?
I think Logan Thompson's been decent with Vegas. He's had some problems with injuries and stuff like that. Yeah, he hasn't lost a game yet, right? It's interesting that he's had a nice margin of error too. I don't know if either him or Charlie Lindgren have. If you had told me they were going to be 9-3, I would expect that both those guys have been, like, you know, playing really well and allowing two goals a game and maybe the 900 plus, you know, save percentage. I don't think either one of them have that, but Logan has done a good job of making key saves at key moments and winning games. And so I think it's both ways. I think they've helped him and he's helped them. He's earned his six wins. It's not like it's been like last night was a one goal game, and he played really well in that game, and it easily could have gone either way in the third period, and he made some pretty important saves.
We're 97 days out from the Four Nations starting. Has he played himself into that picture? I mean, that might be Canada's worst position. It might be their only weakness.
I think that competition is wide open, and he could definitely be part of that conversation now. He should be. I mean, he's played well enough, and I don't know if anyone has really distanced themselves from the field in that group if you look at the Canadian goalies. So if he's winning, and you know that team is going to be good enough that they just need someone to do what he's been doing, it's just making the key saves at the key times and you know, give up, you know, just be there when they need him to be there to make the save. So I think he could fit that role.
Not to go off on a tangent on that tournament, but you're, like you said, Sean, 97 days away. You're not going to be able to outscore a team, right? It's just not – the rosters are going to be too good. You're going to need to be terrific defensively, and you're going to need elite goaltending, and that's Canada's problem. But to that point, and, Tom, you've seen him now. I mean, he's – Logan Thompson 6-0. He's got a 9.03 and a 2.81. I mean, that's good. It's not elite. It's good. He's not an elite goalie, and that's the issue, right?
I think he could fit in well with what they do there. I do think, you know, Carey Price was very good for Canada when they won tournaments, but they won gold medal with Roberto Luongo playing very average when in 2010. I mean, and you know, I think the U.S. has changed since then. You know, Ryan Miller had to play really well just for him to get that far. I think, you know, I think if Finland, as good as they are, if Finland's going to make noise in this tournament, they're going to need Saros or whoever is in net for them to really play extremely well. I don't think Canada needs its goalie to play as well as Finland will need its goalie to play.
Well, you just brought up Saros, and before you brought up the Predators with Stamkos and Marchessault, not having the cushion that, say, you know, the new guys in Washington have. You just saw Nashville. You wrote about him. I think we're at the point where we really have to start wondering, like, okay, I mean, are they that good? You know, like, they have a lot of talent, but are they that good? And it's been a struggle. They are 1-3-1 in their past five games. They've got five goals from Stamkos and Marchessault. They have four wins in their first 13 games. We're still talking about a small sample size, but am I wrong to wonder, are they that good?
Well, I mean, they're obviously not. What we're seeing right now is not a good hockey team, and they would say that as well. I mean, I think they thought last night was a step in the right direction, but they got no results from it, and that they're going to need to get results, right? I didn't realize this until Stamkos pointed out last night, and he wasn't even on the team last year. They had a poor start last year. They were 5-10 in their first 15 games and ended up being a playoff team. But they also had to put a lot of good games together after that, and you don't want to count on climbing out of a hole like that all the time. And so there's pressure there. I mean, Barry Trotz, I think it was a little overplayed to talk about, like, if it doesn't, we don't start playing well soon enough to start the rebuild. He was like, that's not what I didn't mean. I'm tearing a team down. He just means we might have to bring in younger players earlier than I was planning to and see what they can do, because we at least get them experience if this isn't going to be a good year. But I think they're not going to give up yet. I don't think they invested too much money in the team this summer to like say, okay, after 15 games up, it's not working, we're going to tear it down.
Do we remember what happened after the canceled U2 concert? Do we remember what the Edmonton Oilers did last year? Like, I don't get the panic. I don't get it.
It's not panic, Sean. It's they're not in a position you want to be in, and you have to have a level of concern of how long it's going to take. To what Tom wrote, how long is it going to take for the chemistry to come together with that team? They brought in, there's a lot of guys who are returning, but when you bring in big-time players like Stamkos and Marchessault, if it doesn't click right away, I think there is a level of concern of how long that will take. And if you look at Tom's story on NHL.com, I believe that Barry Trotz has that level of concern, not a panic. You agree, Tom? You talk to him.
Yeah, I don't think he's panicking at all, but he just, you know, how can he be happy, right? So you got to be have some concern, and you got to be watching closely. I'll also say, like, yes, they did it last year, but do you really want to count on doing that again? Do you really want to count on whatever, what was Edmonton's winning streak last year that they had? Are you going to count on that happening again? Like, Edmonton, I think, is going to be fine. But, like, you know, I'm just saying, like, you can't count on digging out of holes every year. You go to that well too often, and then you end up on the outside looking in at some point because it didn't turn around. Or you think you're telling yourself, oh, it's going to turn around, and then all of a sudden you're halfway through the season, and you're like, oh, it's really hard to make up points at this part of the season, right?
Yeah, and that may well be true, but when I look at the West, right, and you look at the standings right now, there's probably six teams that you say, oh, I think they're going to make the playoffs. And then you line up all the other teams and tell me whose lineups you like the best. Nashville's one of them.
It's open for them to get in, and for Edmonton, obviously, I don't.
They're 5 points out of the playoffs. You're not going to catch. Let me put it to you this way: you're not going to catch me wringing my hands over this. Okay. It's Barry Trotz's job to wring his hands. It's not mine.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. And if you look at it, they're actually, to your point on the standings, Sean. I mean, Colorado's in a similar position. Edmonton is in a similar position. So you're wondering: is Calgary sustainable? Is St. Louis sustainable? You know, those types of things, you're probably wondering those things as well. And maybe that is, to a degree, the optimistic viewpoint of the Predators right now. But they still don't want to be 4-8-1 after 13 games. They still don't want to have 5 goals between Stamkos and Marchessault to start. They still don't want to be worrying about chemistry and trying to figure that out. That's where they're at right now. So they're not panicking, but you have to have a level of concern of not will it work out, how long will it take to work out, because it can't take that much longer.
It's interesting though, like you look at, you just mentioned the West and how it's set up, and there's a lot of teams with similar records, and then you look in the Metro and you've got the Capitals and the Rangers and the Hurricanes, and even, you know, the Devils have played more games, but there's a lot of points there among those four teams. Like, if you got off to a poor start in that division, it's going to be hard to get back. It'd be harder to get in the heck of it.
It's funny you brought that up, because that's actually where I wanted to go next with you, Tom. We didn't bring it up when we were talking about Washington before, but to me, there's just a clear delineation of top four, bottom four in that division, because we can say, well, the Islanders should be better than they are. Should they? Right? We can say the Pittsburgh Penguins should be better than they are. I mean, really? Should they? Okay. I don't know if they should. They didn't make the playoffs last year or the year before. The Islanders, you know, they're not exactly the deepest team. Philadelphia, we know, is struggling. Columbus, hey, good on Columbus. They've actually gotten off to a better start, but they just played some pretty good teams and got waxed, right? There's a top four and bottom four in the Metro. I think it's November 7th, and we can pretty much say, all right, these four are going to make the playoffs, and these four are not.
I'm not ready to say all those four teams are going to make the playoffs. I have to see more from the Capitals and the Devils. You know, like the Capitals, can they sustain this? I think they will. The Devils, their record is not as good as the other teams. They've played more games, right?
Yes, they've played more games.
So, like, I've learned the last couple of years, how many times have people count the Islanders out, and all of a sudden they're right there in a second, or they finished third in the division last year. I know it was a down year. But, you know, their depth is being pushed right now because of the injuries they've had, both on defense and up front with Duclair. So they're going to need to fight their way through this. But they do have a goalie that could get them through. And if you look on the other side in the Atlantic, what's the picture there? You have a lot of teams with similar records there, too, except for at the top, right?
Hold on. Before Sean replies, when I said what I just said about the top four and bottom four, he was shaking his head and rolling his eyes because he's going to come in now as the voice of reason. Here it is.
It's November 7th. You're ready to crown the four teams in the Metro Division as playoff teams?
Yes, I am.
We can't have you on this podcast anymore. There's 70 games left to be played.
I'm just saying the four teams we're talking about here, the Rangers, the Hurricanes, the Devils, and the Capitals, look consistently way better than the other four teams. If Pittsburgh if the Penguins were better last year and better the year before, I would think, okay, fine. I think this is just the way it's going in Pittsburgh right now. The Islanders' depth to me is just not – they're just not deep enough. They're just not – and they're a team that, like the Penguins now, they just give away the lead a lot. The Flyers are not there yet. We know that. And Columbus, like I said, good on them. They've played a little above their heads to start the season, but I don't think that's sustainable. So you're looking at six teams probably, and the two that I'm saying are not good enough are the teams that – give away leads and don't play consistent hockey. So, yeah, it's November 7th. It's crazy, I understand, to say this is the four teams. And I do it sometimes just to get a rise out of you, Sean, which worked. But at the same time, I don't think it's a crazy thought to say the top four teams in this division are just that much better than the bottom four teams.
I'll just say I think a lot of people are wrong about the Carolina Hurricanes this year, huh? I know it's November 7th, but a lot of people were talking about the demise of the Carolina Hurricanes because they lost some key players, but they have a good team. They have a good team. I don't expect them to go anywhere.
No, neither do I. And I was one of the ones that was wrong. And I've been the biggest Carolina supporter amongst anybody. I love the way they play hockey. I just didn't think they had enough bodies left. So good on them.
It's a style of play that just works for them, right? I mean, they're well coached. It's a style of play that works. Even Freddie Anderson's hurt again. They've won to date, as we talk now, seven games in a row. But they're another, you know, listen, I think they're going to be there. I thought they were a top three team in the division, but I thought they were third, right, coming into the season. Who knows how that works out? Maybe Washington's top three and the Devils or the Rangers bow into the, you know, move down into the four spot. Who knows? But they have a style of play. It works for them. It still comes down to what do they do in April and May and if they get there June. For that team, because and listen, we're talking on November 7th, as we just talked about. Like, you know, it's hard to say, like, oh, okay, well, what are they going to do in April and May? Like, you got to get there. But for a team that's been there as much as they have in the last several years, that's what it comes down to.
I think they're a lot deeper than people gave them credit for. They did lose key players, but I think, you know, you had Dmitry Orlov, who's a career top four defenseman, who was playing in their third pair last year. So you lost Shea and you lost Pesci. That's tough, but you had just basically moved up Orlov to play in their top four. They signed Walker. They signed Gostisbehere. I mean, like, their D is fine. That's not an issue for them, in my opinion. And Netchus is playing really well. So, like, if he's going to play like this, and then Svechnikov another year after the surgery, I think that they're better. And then obviously Jarvis and some other guys. And I might even mention Sebastian Aho. They have a really – I think their depth is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I overreacted. I'll own it. It was dramatic. It could have been a franchise-altering offseason, and it wasn't. And good on their GM and good on their coach and good on the players. They didn't hang their heads and say, oh, woe is us. Look at who went out the door. People don't want to play here, whatever it is. They pulled up their pants, and they went out, and they played, and they proved everybody wrong, at least to this point.
To this point, they have, no doubt about it. So, listen, Tom, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much. And by the way, you get to see Crosby and Ovechkin Friday night, and Crosby, as we speak, going for 600. Maybe he gets one in Carolina on Thursday and he gets 600, or maybe he gets two in Washington and you get to see goal number 600 there. So it never gets old, right, those two?
No, and they're both playing really well right now. And it'd be interesting if Crosby does get it, because then you'll have – The only two active players who have 600 goals in the same game. So,
yeah,
one has 861. But still, like, I mean, the thing about it, I mean, I'll have a story about this coming out before that game on Friday. But just the two of them, what they've done, and where they're going to end up in history in 20. You know, this is their 20th season, and it's kind of remarkable. And we definitely should enjoy every time they play each other, because we don't know how many more years they have of this left. But they're still doing it well, and it's going to be fun, I think, on Friday night.
Yeah, I think they've long appreciated the competition, but now they appreciate and respect each other as well over the years. So it'll be a lot of fun, and we got a lot of coverage on NHL.com. Tom's doing a big story on Crosby and Ovechkin. Tom, thanks so much. This was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun seeing Sean in Finland, too. I don't know if either one of us is back on Eastern time yet, but we're working there.
Kitos, Tom.
Kitos.
Great stuff there with Tom, and that interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, I went to open the mailbag a little bit, right? So I do the mailbag every week. We talk about it here sometimes. I got a question this – well, I got two questions this week that I want to talk about. One, on Anthony Stolarz, now with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and two, on the Buffalo Sabres, who actually I just caught up with at Madison Square Garden this morning, Thursday morning. But let's go to the Stolarz question first. The question was, is Anthony Stolarz a number one goalie, right? Is he taking that job away from Joe Wall, or is he just a number one goalie? So what do I do when I get a question about goaltending, Sean? I go to Kevin Woodley, who's our goalie guy, right? And I got to ask him, okay, what do you think? I see the numbers. What do you think? And Woodley kind of had the same thought I had, that he's played like a number one goalie for over a year now. If you go back to last season, he was 16-7-2 with the Florida Panthers. This is Anthony Stolarz, at 2.03 goals against and a .925 save percentage. But he wasn't a number one goalie because Sergei Bobrovsky was the number one goalie. Now he is playing in that role, probably because of the injury to Joe Wall at the start of the season. And as of today, he's 5-2-2 with a 2.12 goals against and a .928 save percentage. And he's facing two more shots per game than he did last season. So Kevin Woodley, our guy based in Vancouver and our goalie guy, says to me he's playing like one. The numbers suggest it. And I think so too. Sean, Anthony Stolarz is the number one goalie in the National Hockey League right now. And I didn't think we'd get there. He looked like a backup for like a career backup. He obviously has to now continue to do it, right? But he might very well be the answer that the Toronto Maple Leafs to one of the biggest questions that the Toronto Maple Leafs had going into the season.
But is he the right answer?
Right now he is.
How do you feel about going into the playoffs with Anthony Stolarz as your number one?
Well, let's see how he plays the rest of the season, number one. But number two, he's a guy he didn't play in the playoffs with the Panthers last season, but he was around it. He experienced winning, okay? I know it's not the same as being in net for you, but short of having Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Hellebuck, Saros, Swayman to a degree, even though he's struggling this season, and maybe a handful of others, you're going into the playoffs with Anthony Stolarz as your number one goalie, and you got to be feeling pretty good about it. You know, like, unless you have those guys, you know, and every team has those guys. There's only a handful of those guys in the league. If he can be the next level, couldn't he be Aiden Hill? Why can't he be Aiden Hill?
When you haven't won, for as long as the Maple Leafs haven't won, Anthony Stolarz is not the name you want to be hearing.
Well, no,
In April and May. Yeah, let's be honest, neither is Wall.
Okay, but what if Anthony Stolarz in April, at the end of the regular season, Anthony Stolarz has a 2.35 goals against and a .917 save percentage in 50 starts?
Yeah, and the answer there is, what's he done in the playoffs? And look, let me say very clearly before I go any further, I think Anthony Stolarz is the best. First of all, he's a Jersey guy. Second of all, you know how I am when it comes to big events. I don't want to wait in line with 72 other people to talk to Barkov or McDavid. So when they have media day,
you go talk to Anthony Stolarz.
I make my way around and I talk to some players who maybe do not draw as big a crowd. I spent a good 10 to 12 minutes talking to Anthony Stolarz during media day. Plus, I also don't get to write the big story like you, Dan. So I have time to dig a little bit and find other things. And I spent like 10 to 12 minutes talking to Stolarz about his career and where he's at and where he feels he's at. And does he feel like he's a number one? And he does. And I think that's the biggest thing. But I also do think there's a track record, and I think we'd have this conversation about any goalie that goes into the playoffs as a number one for a legitimate contender, because it is – I don't care that you were on the ice when they won the cup. You didn't play every second day. Your body didn't get the crap beat out of it. Your brain didn't get scrambled by doubts and criticisms and everything else. You didn't make that journey inside your own head that every other goalie in the playoffs did. And it's just different. It's not what Bobrovsky did on the ice. It's what he did mentally and what he did physically. And to be able to show up every day for 2 months. And that is a learned skill. Who was the last guy that did it as a rookie? Well, as a playoff rookie who walked into the playoffs with no experience.
Cam Ward.
Okay. How long ago was that?
Yeah. Oh, 18 years ago. No, listen, and I get your point. I do. And we can't project out right now. But at the present time, and this is what Kevin Woodley told me, he looks and he's playing like a number one. But can he handle it? Can his body handle it? We have to see that. At the present time, he looks good for the Maple Leafs. So that's question number one.
And I would never go against Kevin Woodley, by the
way. No, absolutely. Not when
he's my hero.
Not when it comes to goaltending. Number two, the other question I got was on the Buffalo Sabres, who I just caught up with at Madison Square Garden this morning.
Wait, let me guess, Dan. Let me guess.
You go ahead.
They figured it out. They're on their way, and they think they found a game that they can replicate.
Spot on, my friend. Spot on. Because that's all we've heard from the Buffalo Sabres for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, like I've heard this record before. Yeah,
of course you have. So here's a question, though. And I don't think there's no answer. But we always talk about the Buffalo Sabres and we say, well, they don't know how to win, right? They don't know how to win. Well, how do you learn how to win? You got to have a little bit of success, right? Like, you have to have a little bit of success and figure out, how did we have that success? And how do we make it work? Well, until you have some of it, you're never going to learn how to sustain it, is my point. So they feel like their game is back on track. We've heard this record before. There's too much talent. I looked on the ice this morning, Sean. There's so much talent in Buffalo right now. It's just, there's a roster loaded with talent. And they think they're turning the corner. We'll see. But to me, you got to be able to look at how you won 5-1 against the Ottawa Senators the other night and say, here's what we can repeat out of that. And then you repeat it when they play the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. And win or lose, you repeat it when you play the next game, which I think is against Calgary on Saturday. And then they play again on Monday, I believe, against Montreal, right? Repeat, repeat, repeat. You can't say you found your game and it's on the track, but then you fall off the track. So the question I got was, can Lindy Ruff win with this team? And the answer is yes. It has to be yes, because there's so much talent there.
I mean, they're loaded with talent. Look, you want to score goals? Tage Thompson, Tuck, Paterka. You want good defensemen? Power, Dahlin, Byram. Like, they've been waiting for a talented team for years, and they have it. And mentally, they have to put it all together. And I think that Lindy Ruff is that player. He did it for the Devils. He took all that talent, and he gave them a belief. And he gave them a system that they could play in where they could find some success. And then they could replicate it, and then they could build their confidence, and then they could go from there and find their way. And I think that's what Lindy's really good at. He hasn't done that yet, but, you know, we've talked about a lot of other teams that it's early, and I don't give Buffalo quite as much rope because we've seen those long losing streaks every year. You know, you get excited about Buffalo, and then they lose a bunch of games, and then they're kind of out of it, and they're fighting the whole rest of the time to get back in. So after a while, you're like, well, I'm not going to do that again. You know, fool me once, that's okay. Fool me twice, I'm an idiot. So I don't want to get fooled again. So I'm being a little reserved, and I was being a little sarcastic in knowing what they said, because I've heard it before. And again, we talked about it with Pasternak and Marchand. You could say anything you want. Go out and prove it. Prove me wrong. And that's where the Buffalo Sabres are. And I hope they do.
Well, I hope they do too, because it's not a very young team anymore. It's an exciting team. It's a great market for hockey, and it's been just too long.
And if this team can find a way into the playoffs, nobody's going to want to go into Buffalo, because it will be chaos.
It'll be great. And we brought it up a little bit with Tom, but Sidney Crosby's going for 600 goals. And I did a story. I sat down with him in Long Island Wednesday with Crosby. But Sean, I mean, the question is, did you ever think of Sidney Crosby as a goal scorer? Like, for me, Sidney Crosby was always the hockey player, the playmaker, the do-everything kind of guy. He's going to be one of 21 players in NHL history to score 600 goals. Like, he's an elite goal scorer, and we don't – I think it's the one area of his game we probably don't give him enough credit for.
Well, I didn't think of him as a goal scorer for a while, and then it changed. And it changed that big year, right? That when he had 51 goals in 2009, 2010. Every year he decides that there's an aspect of his game he wants to work on and that he wants to be better at, even though he's the best player in the world. One year it's face-offs, another year it's this, another year it's that. You might not have thought of Sidney Crosby as a goal scorer coming into the league, but when he decided he wanted to be a goal scorer, he was a goal scorer.
Matt, there at practice at UBS Arena on Wednesday, and, you know, practice is a quick practice. Guys are coming off the ice, and a bunch, you know, the whole team's off the ice, and I'm still waiting to talk to Sidney Crosby, and everybody's off the ice. All the young guys there, all the guys there that are playing 7-8 minutes a night, 12 minutes, you know, culprits of blowing a lead against the Islanders the night before. You know who's still out on the ice, still working? Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang. Maybe somebody should take notice of that on that team and say, you know what, if these guys are going to stay out there for that long, maybe I should just be out there, not because I need the practice, but because I should watch them, and I should watch what they do. I think that's one of the issues the Penguins have, to be honest with you, Sean.
And I understand everybody knows their game, and they know what they need and everything else, but I've always been the guy who's the last one to leave the room, because you're a team. Right. Even if you're done, you're there and you're supporting the other people on your team.
Yeah. Just stand there and pass him the puck if that's all you got to do. You're watching him. Right. Like you're paying attention to what he's doing. And nobody did. It was at least 15 minutes that they were the only two on the ice by them. Like at least 15 minutes. Guys were dressed, showered, and going to the bus before Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang came off the ice.
Look, everybody that plays in the NHL likes the game of hockey, loves the game of hockey, but there's very few that love it at the level that Sidney Crosby does. I think that's the difference. And maybe you can't hold people to that same level. I don't know. But if somebody set an example, and that's somebody, Sidney Crosby, I'm following.
And Sean, listen, before we go, big weekend coming up. It's Hockey Hall of Fame weekend. I'm not going this year, and you're not going this year either, but both of us agree it's one of the best weekends of the season. And the NHL Induction Class podcast, that's available right now. Go listen to that. The class, Colin Campbell and David Poile, are builders. Jeremy Roenick, Shea Weber, Pavel Datsyuk, Natalie Darwitz, and Chrissy Wendell are the players going in. 7 new inductees. Monday night is the induction ceremony. The weekend begins Friday night with the Hockey Hall of Fame game. The Maple Leafs always play that. We're going to have we've done a ton of features already. You can see all of them on NHL.com. We're going to have Mike Zeisberger, Nick Kotsenika, Bill Price, and Dave McCarthy on the ground in Toronto covering the whole weekend. It's always a blast this weekend. The Hall of Fame weekend, Sean, is the best to ever play the game get together to celebrate the game.
I'm gutted that I'm not going to be there. I can't remember the last time I wasn't there. It's such a great class. Our coverage has been top-notch. One of the coolest things that we do is not only do we write really in-depth features on each of the people that are going in the Hall of Fame, we have testimonials for each of the inductees where we find somebody who's been instrumental in their careers, in their lives, whatever it might be, and we have them do a testimonial. You did Coley Campbell and Gary Bettman did the testimonial, and it's brilliant. Shea Weber. We had Carey Price do the testimonial. Generally, not giving away how the sausage is made, we help a little bit with the testimonials. Not so with Carey Price. Carey Price said, I would like to write it. I don't need to talk to you, Dave Stubbs. I'll do it, and I'll send it to you. It is one of the most brilliant things I've ever read about a hockey player. And it was so genuine, and it was so true, and it was in Carey's voice. I'm thinking about hiring him for NHL.com. You mentioned all the great people that are going to the Hall of Fame. Our good friend, Scott Burnside, of 9 million outlets, is going into the Hall of Fame as the writer in the writer's wing. I can't think of a person that deserves it more as a writer and as a human. And I, like I said, I'm gutted I'm not going to be there to congratulate him and celebrate it. Scott, to me, is the best of what hockey journalism is about and the best of what makes this job so amazing, which is the community of friends that we all have. And whatever market we go into, there's always somebody you're happy to see and somebody who is a genuinely wonderful person. And the ringleader of all those people is Scott Burnside. And I've known him for more than 20 years now, and I can't think of a better human being, and I can't think of a better hockey writer. So congratulations to Scott Burnside for the honor that he gets this week.
100%. You said it. I can't say it any better. He's just a terrific human being, and he gets a great honor, as do so many others at Hockey Hall of Fame weekend. We'll talk a little bit more about Hockey Hall of Fame weekend in the class next week, and we'll look ahead to the class of 2025.
By the way, Dan, before we go, I have one important update that I know everybody that listens to the podcast wants to know. When I was in Finland, I found our good friend Wyatt Johnson. I had to ask him about the reindeer, Santa's friend. And Wyatt had the reindeer. He liked it.
Okay. So it's not just for Santa anymore.
No, they're not just Santa's friends. Now they're a good, hearty meal to have while you're in Finland.
This was a lot of fun. We'll talk more about the Hall of Fame next week, class of 2025 as well. It's the NHL At The Rink podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.